All right, welcome this afternoon to our Board of Equalization meeting. We have two commissioners here presently, Commissioner Sakovich and Commissioner Lee. And we will just start and go right into our agenda. First thing on our agenda is approve the Board of Equalization Assessor Approved Review Process Report. Any questions to that?
No.
And I'll suspend rules so that I can second. So a motion would be in order.
Make a motion that we approve agenda item number one.
And I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Number two is to approve the Board of Equalization's hearing process report. I have no questions there.
No.
Motion.
Make a motion that we approve agenda item number two.
And I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Number three is to approve or deny an owner's request to change taxable status from secondary residential to primary residence. These are usually really easy.
Yeah, this was acquired by the current owner in 2014. It was previously a secondary residence for the prior owner, and they never got around to requesting primary until
really? Okay.
their values
all right.
Saw change. So it's pretty well documented that they're living there and needs to be there changed.
While you're standing there, what about number four?
This was an interesting one. It was a Airbnb, a short-term rental, a high-end one, and they ended up pulling it off the Airbnb, and it's now their primary, and he's submitted plenty of documentation to that effect.
Okay.
So I don't see a problem with either one of them.
All right, thank you. I would suggest then that we probably go ahead and approve both three and four. A motion.
I make a motion we approve items number three and four.
I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Number five is to approve or deny a petition to the Board of Equalization to hear an appeal of a property valuation after the filing deadline.
This is Bert Harvey with Utah County Clerk Auditor's Office. This first one, this late appeal was filed by Jay Livingston with the Fibernet Business Park. He is filing to have additional parcels heard as a late appeal. I will let I don't know if the board members have read through his statement, but just to summarize, he filed an appeal originally. He only included when he filed the appeal on time with the auditor's office. He filed only, was it one or two? Just one.
But
he filed one parcel.
But he thought he filed more.
When he got to the hearing, he found out he only had one parcel on the hearing. They went through the hearing. He then filed a late appeal, which the board approved last month to hear one more parcel. And for some reason, he thought he was filing again for more parcels. I'm not sure where the miscommunication happened. I'm not sure why he thought he was filing, but he's taken two shots at this now and would like the board to approve to hear a late appeal for all the parcels he forgot to file the first time. I mean, the board approved his late appeal last time for, because we could see that he made a good faith effort. We were on the basis that it looks like he'd made a good faith effort to file the appeal, but after several conversations, when they filed their late appeal last time, they only included the one extra parcel. We only put that one extra parcel on there, which the board approved, and now apparently he still thinks there should be more. It's up to the board to feel if this meets the extenuating circumstances, but this is basically his third attempt to file an appeal for the parcels I guess he thought he was filing in the beginning. So
okay. I'm inclined to approve, just and hopefully we can get this one over with.
Good.
If not, is it three times and then you're out after that?
Oh, you know, three strikes, you're out. Third time's a charm. Pick your metaphor.
since we did it on the other ones, you know, that's my thought. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion. We approve item number 5.
And I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Number 6, I'll let you go through it, but it looks like it's a possible classification.
Yeah, this is a factual error question. I think the assessor's
this
office
is a little unusual. I talked to the owner and
to who? The mayor?
The owner.
Oh, the owner. Okay. That was interesting.
The owner. He had appealed the prior year and had his value reduced. And then the next year came and his value went back up again. And so what happened is I looked around and houses, we have a grading system where we grade a house based upon the quality of construction. His house has been graded as a good, but most houses like his around him have been graded as an average plus, which is a little bit lower level of quality. So even though it's, that's the factual error. Even though it's not necessarily like a quantitative thing, it's more of a judgmental thing, but I'm comfortable if we want to approve this as a late appeal. I've already changed it in the database to be an average plus, and it's just a matter of me revaluing it based upon that new categorization.
Well, when you're comfortable with it, it makes it really easy for me.
Yeah. So, and he and I, we talked, and we're pretty close on what we think the value should be, so I don't think it's going to take a lot of time.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we approve item number 6.
I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Number 7 is to approve or deny an application for a property tax exempt. This is a new property tax exempt.
Let me go ahead and add Vicki to the panel. One moment.
I'll just speak on the personal property side of it. Just so you know, there's been no equipment listed yet for their personal property. So they haven't.
And for the church?
For the church, yeah.
I thought I saw some in their application. In this application.
Oh, in the application. Well, all I know is there's none that's actually been recorded.
Oh, okay.
Or in the account trader, there's no equipment in it.
Okay. Can people hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. This property previously was exempt under Biblical Ministries and Orchard Hills Baptist Church, or whatever it's called, purchased the property. Bible Church purchased the property from Biblical Ministries. And so... Paul, did you want to talk about the exemption part, the 501c3 part?
Well, yeah, there were two issues that I was kind of looking at with this application. One was whether or not they were a nonprofit entity. The statute requires that they be a nonprofit entity. I talked to Vicki about that in additional review. So they weren't identified as a 501c3. But they did incorporate under the Nonprofit Corporation Statute or Act under the state code. And I think that's all that's required. I don't think you have to be a 501c3, but you do have to be a nonprofit. So I think they satisfy that because, as I mentioned, they filed under the Nonprofit Act. So I think that's okay.
Okay.
The second issue is that to qualify for an exemption, you have to put the property to the exclusive use of the qualifying use. And so under this statute, either a charitable, educational, or religious purpose. So again, the statute says exclusive use. And in their application, they've indicated that they rent the property out fairly non-discriminately, so just anybody that wants to rent the property out seems to be able to rent the property. They have a standing weekly rental with, I believe, a for-profit corporation. So those facts are concerning, that the property is not in the exclusive use of a religious nature. Again, the statute says exclusive use. I'll tell you that...
if it's not, then what you're saying is you can't give tax-exempt status. If it's not, what if it's partial? I mean, because we've had this in the past where
right.
it might be a partial.
Yeah, I guess there's two sort of things to think about. I had it pulled up a second ago. Here we go. The standards of practice, which are non-binding, but are, you know, for good reference, issued by the State Tax Commission, says that the Utah Supreme Court, I'm quoting from the standards of practice, the Utah Supreme Court has determined that although exclusivity should be strictly construed, minor deviations from exclusive use should not automatically defeat an exemption. So that's basically all the help I can provide you is that, you know, they say it, you know, exclusivity should be strictly construed, and yet minor deviations should not automatically defeat the exemption.
What does minor deviations mean?
I think that's where your judgment comes into play to determine whether or not any deviation is minor or if it exceeds a minor deviation. And if it exceeds a minor deviation, then yeah, you can't grant the application for exemption. Commissioner Lee just asked about partial. You can do a partial exemption, but it actually has to be like a division of the property. For example, if a property is split into a duplex and one part is exclusively put to an approved use, then you could exempt that and the other part would be not exempt.
Like we do with the hospital and their cafeteria
yep,
area? Or
exactly.
Their...
Okay. Yeah, but it's got to be like square footage
right.
as opposed to like time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You can't split the time up and say that, well, it's mostly used for this, but you know, 75% of it is used for this and 25% of the time it's used for a different purpose. You can't do it that way. It's got to be walls and doors and separated by that. So I don't know if there's anybody here from the church. I don't see anybody in the room to speak to their rental arrangement.
I believe there is someone on the panel. There is someone online. So I'm going to go ahead and let in Mr. Jeremy Howard.
Yeah, that's who I sent a letter to.
If you have any questions for me about the standard, I'm happy to have a discussion with you about that.
Okay, I believe we've got Mr. Howard able to talk.
Did Mr. Howard hear? Mr. Howard,
yes.
This is Paul Jones. Did you hear my comments for the last couple of minutes?
Yes. Yeah, so a couple of things to note on that. So we, last year, well, it was actually 2019 mostly, Business Networking International approached us about renting out the building. It's a collection of business people in our area needing a place to meet since the Payson area doesn't have a hotel meeting area or anything like that. And they are a nonprofit organization. And we agreed to the rental agreement that was in our application, which has since been terminated since COVID has happened. They haven't been using our building for, well, next month it'll be a year. And so we haven't collected anything in the last 12 months from them for renting, for being here. And if that's something that is not allowed to continue, we are way more interested in terminating that contract than we are losing any property tax exemption. So that could, we could adjust our application and terminate all future agreements with anything that, that would get in the way of that.
So how does that apply then? Is there a time frame on that, a look back, or is it just now going forward on the new with a new application? I always figured it's not going forward. If there's not somebody in there that's currently renting it, and then with an understanding that they have going forward. Is that, that's not a problem then? That's
now resolved? Yeah, no, I think that's fine. When I read the application, I thought it was an ongoing weekly meeting, and so that's why I was concerned. But
okay.
if they haven't had them in there for a year, and also I didn't realize they were a nonprofit, so that actually may not have violated the, you know, that may not have violated the use of it anyway. Maybe still just slightly an issue to be aware of. I think they sort of had kind of a standing understanding that they could rent out the property in the future. Again, if they do, they sort of put themselves at risk of losing their exempt status. So just, I guess maybe just so they're aware.
Yeah, I think I heard Jeremy there. His interests were, you know, he explained that part of it. He'll make sure that doesn't happen in the future. Is what I heard. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what I heard. Well, I thought I heard you say.
Yes, that's correct. Yep. Whatever we need to do to maintain property tax exemption, we will adjust to those standards.
And I wonder if we could define whether a nonprofit organization were to lease or rent portions of that their facility, would that allow them to continue on with their nonprofit status? That might be a good clarifying point for the future.
Yeah, well, again, not all nonprofits are tax exempt for real property tax exemption. So it would need to be a charitable or an educational or a religious use, not simply just a nonprofit use. So this Business Networking International, I don't know anything about them, but if they're not charitable or religious or educational, then they might violate okay. the exclusivity requirement.
I got it, okay.
Jim Stevens, Assessor's Office. I just wanted to clarify before you make a motion that they are requesting prorated from the date of purchase of the property. So we would want to look at what the use was and how, you know, how far back that's going to go. I didn't look to see when they acquired it. So,
so how far back are we talking then?
Is that September of 2020? And so the BNI group hasn't met here since March or February of 2020.
Okay, so we'd probably be fine then.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. If they were renting it out in September,
he said it has been a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Vicki, is this Vicki, is this for a, is the application before us, just because I don't have the agenda in front of me, is this for a 2021 exemption or a 2020 exemption that we're looking at?
2020, prorated for 2020, from date of purchase.
From date of purchase, so, okay. So we received, did we receive?
I believe it was September 30th.
Did we receive the application on time?
It was not received on time because I could not get an answer from Anthony before he left on whether they needed to apply. And once I finally got an answer from someone in the attorney's office, they filed like the next day.
And, yeah, it might be helpful to note our church, it's the same church that's been in Payson since 1970. We just graduated from the Christian Missions Agency that started our church in 1970. So since the title changed from that agency to us as an independent organization now, we were trying to figure out if we needed to reapply since we're the same church, same people, same mission type thing.
Right. But basically the on time, not a question. They were making an attempt to file an application on time. It was
right.
A procedure from the county that prevented. Okay. Just want to make sure we had that clear.
Okay. You ready for a motion?
I make a motion that we approve item number 7.
I'll second that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That is approved 2-0.
Thank you.
Okay, number 8 is to approve or deny an application review of the board for the Equalization of Farmland Assessment Act. This is a continuation one from the last time.
Correct. So to refresh your memory, this parcel is 5.5 acres, and it was previously calculated that at least 1.19 acres was being used in association with the residential use and not the agricultural use, so it did not meet the requirements of having 5 acres in agriculture production. So you guys wanted me to do some different calculations, so he's going to pull up those pictures that I added into the packet there.
This is one with a grass backyard?
Yes.
Without a fence.
So the first photo...
So which... Sorry, Diane, do you want
the,
me to just...
In order
to,
of...
Is it the aerials or is it...
The aerials, yes. The aerials, okay. Yeah. Picture speaks 1,000 words, right?
Let me go ahead and share this for the room.
Okay, so that is the calculation excluding that backyard grass area, which is what they say they cut and feed to their livestock. So that calculation, as you see, gets it to 0.7. And then the next photo...
So I got to clarify. The parcel, the whole parcel is
5.5, so 5.5.
5.5, and so...
So even if we cut out the backyard, it would not give it 5 acres. But we would have, if we calculate that, plus the sports court, which was the next photo, the sports court is 0.07. So the 0.7 and 0.07 added together, obviously 0.77, if we reduced it to not include the backyard, still does not give them enough acreage to have 5 acres in agriculture production. I did some other calculations. That one there is actually including all of the property that does not have agriculture production on it at the time that this aerial was taken, which actually is 2.13 acres. And then I went as far as, and that's my original calculations, was about 1.25, the backyard, the sports court, the front yard, the house, the driveway. That's the normal residential area that is included with residential use. And then if you go to the next one, I went as far as looking back. So that is what it looked like in 2011. So as you see, that backyard and all that stuff was being used. So it was their choice to enlarge their yard and tear out the back portion. If you go to the next year is 2013. And you can see that that was in agricultural production very actively. You know, they easily were trying to continue agriculture production with the barn and the livestock there. And then then go to the next one, which would be 2015. And as you see from 2015, it starts to kind of transition over. And then you see that you can see how green it is on the south end, and the other end they have configured it differently for their purposes beyond agricultural use.
And just because that part oh,
and,
is here.
And the last, oh, know. Just a second. The last photo, that is the new barn that in those aerials you can kind of see the footprint that was being built. Yeah, you can't see it in that one, but the ones that we saw before, it's to the side of that. So that's the new barn. So they still have the old barn, and then there's the new barn. Yeah, right there. See the cement footing? Nope. Yep, that right there. That's the new barn, and that last picture is the picture of that barn. So that's all the calculations I did from all the different aerial photos over the years and with the information I had.
So your calculation, is that correct? Is 0.77 is not in ag?
Correct.
And so that leaves about...
Well, I mean, I actually believe that it's the 1.25 because the backyard is residential, whether they use the grass clippings.
So can you not count mixed-use areas? Because really, our grass holds front and back is fed.
Hold on 1 second, please. Okay. And we'll give you a chance in just a second. I think there was a question if you want to finish up that question.
What you're saying, that if you take out the 0.77, then what's left is 4.48 acres are actually ag?
Right, so they do not have 5 acres in agriculture production.
So they're off by half an acre or so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, online, go ahead.
Okay, so I see what she's saying. Now, the back area, the reason it's not as green, A, is part of construction, but we have put in animal pens back there. There's a fence now that goes along the property line up the north side as well. That's for pens in order to put animals out, turn them out into for grazing areas, which we do plan on planting like a grazing grass back there. We just aren't able to do it until we're done driving over it. But we are putting in the fences. That's all being turned to pasture and grazing. And then the alfalfa is there on the south side. We do feed all of the grass. So for me, I guess I'm like, we do, I mean, not just the back grass. We feed the front grass. We also have fruit trees. And then we've had grapevines that we're actually moving to another area. But like we do, our house is surrounded by agricultural use because we do feed all the clippings that is fed to. And then, you know, we do show that we raise beef cattle. We raise show lambs. I've shown, you know, that we've raised the pigs. The kids show them. So we are raising agricultural animals. We are using all of our grass and all of our alfalfa and all of our pasture area in order to care for those animals, in order to feed them. And so, you know, I guess it's just a question of, is there anything that says you can't use your yard grass as feed for agricultural animals? Because if we can use it, then it seems like we should be able to count all of our grass area, because all of that is fed once a week throughout from May until September, when the at the end of September, when the water turns off again and no longer is the grass growing. So if it subsidizes for agricultural animals, and we've turned in receipts and taxes showing that we do, we have sold those, we have sold hay, you know, I guess that's just the question. Is we feel like we use it.
So the question I have then is, if it does demonstrate, the law does demonstrate that you can't use regular grass for pasture grass, would you concede then that there's that's a problem?
Definitely. I get that. That's where I'm wondering, like, if that's the only way, obviously, we would qualify. I understand that. It's just if we are able, you know, and we do use it and we do feed with it, if it can be counted as part of our farmland. That's really what our whole thing was. I get it. If it can't, if it's in the law that it can't, we understand. And that's, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. That's the way it is.
So I did touch base with the state tax commission to see if they had anything, any other previous cases or experience with this. And they said that lawns planted as lawns are residential use. Whether they cut the grass or not, just like gardens are associated with residential use, even though, like when she mentioned the grapevines, there's not rows and rows and rows of grapevines. The grapevines are grown as a residential use, even though it's an agricultural, just like gardening people consider agricultural, but it's on the scale of a residential use. And it would be the same with people feeding produce from their garden to their chickens or their pigs. It wouldn't qualify their garden as agricultural because of that use, because it's still a residential garden, unless it was mass produce.
So there is a law that says you can't mix use your lawn for your agricultural feed?
Well, you can do it. It just doesn't qualify you for greenbelt.
Well, that's what I mean. Like in the green belt, it says mixed use doesn't count. Like if you're using it for your agricultural as well.
It doesn't say anything about mixed use. It says lawns are lawns. It's not an alfalfa field. It's not, it's a lawn. It's a residential lawn. So therefore it's residential.
Yeah. I just didn't know if there was something. I didn't see anything that was like, I guess that's where our argument was, but we feel like it is mixed use. And so it is part of our agricultural as well. And just, you know, that's how it worked out the best. Even if you look at those pictures previous, we couldn't ever get the alfalfa to grow well back there because of the way the water is. And so we deemed the best way to use our property was to turn that back area into a pasture and runs for the animals, which we have put in pens, and then to do grass in that area in between with the barns and the house. So, and then, like I said, we feed the front grass too, but that's fine. It's, you know, you guys have to determine what that is, but I guess that's where our argument would be, was if we can count that grass as mixed use where it is fed as part of a feed supplement to the cows. So it's, I guess, your decision from there.
Okay, thank you. All right, bring it up here to the board. Any further discussion or a motion?
Based on this, 3/4 acres not in agricultural, then I'll have to make a motion to deny the application.
And I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So that's denied with a 2-0 vote. Number nine, I'm not sure how we want to run this. So I know we've got 9, 10, 11, 12, all the rest of them. What's the problem, maybe before we jump into that, and what do you recommend in the way of?
Well, here we are again to the access interruption petitions. I believe on 9 through 14, you made motions last week that you would entertain taking evidence on the value issue under the access interruption because of COVID-19. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, and I believe that they were going to work with the assessor's office as well.
And the assessors were going to see if they could work together and come up with stipulated values or agreed upon values.
Chris Paulson, County Assessor. I believe in each case a value has been agreed to by both parties. So I believe we have one person representing 8 through 13, and then the Thanksgiving property is number 14.
So 9 through 13 are tagged together. I would like to, since there was, I'm sure, a lot of discussion behind the scenes, I think it'd be nice to at least have an understanding of how it was come to and how both sides, agree to it. And I can see that Chris or Peter.
And Peter Jepson is on for the assessor's office, and the attorney, I forget his name, for the Nate. Nate is on.
Nate Runyon.
Yes.
I'm here.
Yeah, there's Nate. So
maybe Peter, if you could start us,
one comment.
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
And I'll defer to Mr. Runyon on this to the extent that if he's going to disclose or wants to disclose any confidential information.
Yes, thank you.
The board can make a motion to go into close to receive that. So just, I think the board is willing to do that, and I think we'd let Mr. Runyon make the claim for that if he sees fit.
And the same would apply to
Alan
as well.
Yeah.
We're going to try to do this without having to disclose commercial confidential information so that we can do this in open session, commissioners.
Okay. So, Peter, maybe if you'd kind of start us off. And I don't know if we want to talk about these on an individual basis. Is that the best, or to go through it one or, as a group in the way of coming to the valuation?
Yeah, I think that we have everything resolved with the exception of one issue. So let me talk about the things that we have resolved. Mr. Runyon and I talked at length on 9 and 10, which are the two hotels, the La Quinta and the Days Inn. And after reviewing the data that was submitted and other items, we came to an understanding and agreement that a 10% reduction in market value, which would reflect a 10% reduction in taxes, was the thing that would most fairly reflect the value based on the commissioners accepting COVID-19 as access interruption. For the movie, the Megaplexes, the AMC and the Larry H. Miller, they had a substantial amount of data, and if we wanted us to review that, it would take a long time because the appraisal was over 100 pages, and I had
That's why we had you meet before.
Yeah, well, we had some disagreements on terms and things that were fairly substantial, but after reviewing everything through, we concluded that for all three of those, a 15% reduction in market value and a 15% reduction in taxes would fairly reflect the change in market value that the commissioners are saying based on COVID-19 and access interruption.
Okay, so let me see. Hopefully, if you don't mind, if I pause you every once in a while. So on 9 and 10, 9 and 10, you're talking about 10%.
Yes.
And then you're saying 11 through 13
was 15.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
For the theaters.
Yes. Okay, go ahead and continue. I just wanted to clarify
that. Okay. So when I emailed back to Nate, just making sure we were clear that we were talking annual market value reductions and annual tax reduction, in the email, Nate, I'm not saying he threw it in, but it was the first time to my understanding that personal property was ever brought up. I recognize that personal property was brought up in the applications. There was no mention of personal property anywhere on number 9 or number 10, so it is not part of the consideration. For number 11, 12, and 13, there was a small paragraph, and I'll let our attorney speak to that. But prior to that, I didn't know that we were even thinking about personal property. So I'm going to let Nate and Diana go through that. I will make one comment. In the appraisals that were done on page 32 of 107, the appraiser does say that personal property is not included in his appraisals. So from my point of view, and I'll let Diana speak to this, there was no information. We never, it says in the code clearly that the preponderance of evidence is the taxpayer's responsibility. So I didn't feel comfortable in adding personal property into without the commissioner saying that they think it should be included, because it wasn't clearly in the application from my point of view. It only gave the serial number. I'm not even sure what account numbers we're talking to. So I agreed with Nate that if the commissioners decide they want to include and throw in personal property, that the same adjustments that we've talked about for 11, 12, and 13 would probably be applicable. But it was my opinion that it doesn't meet the burden that the code sets forth, and the appraisal never mentions it other than it's not included. And I'll stop at that.
Okay. Commissioners, might I address those points at this time then?
Sure.
I think, just to start out, I think we're in agreement. There's no issue for 9 and 10, a 10% adjustment, and then 11, 12, and 13, a 15% adjustment. So, you know, I don't know if we want to address the second issue second and do a motion and just say, look, we've all agreed that there's a valuation adjustment for those on those, and then we can address the personal property issue. Or I'm happy to address the personal property issue and explain our rationale. Happy to do whatever the board wants to do, or Paul, if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, why don't you address the the personal property?
Okay. So with the in our applications, we noted, and Mr. Jepson's absolutely correct. In the applications for the two hotels, it was not noted. Personal property wasn't specifically called out. So we're not asking for an adjustment for personal property, even though the hotels certainly do have personal property. We did specifically note that we were requesting an adjustment for personal property in the three movie theater applications. And what's interesting is the access interruption statute. The county doesn't have a specific application form for access interruption. It has a application form for real property. It has an application form for personal property, but it doesn't have a specific one for the access interruption. The deadline for access interruption is a different deadline than the other appeal deadlines. Mm. So it really, there's no real application. And frankly, the hotel applications were just a letter application. The movie theater applications, we used the real property application, but then attached an attachment to explain the access interruption position and arguments. And when we requested a value, And then at the bottom, we also noted including personal property if applicable. And each of the theaters does have personal property. And the reason we put applicable is because, you know, there is a legal determination, and I'm going to point that out to the commission or the board, what our basis is for that. If you look at the statute, and I apologize, we have to go back to this again. This is fourth time's the charm on this one since it's our fourth one. But in the statute, looking at the statute 59-2-1004.6, throughout that statute, it refers to property. And it doesn't give a specific reference to real property or personal property. And so where there's no specific reference to either one, we have to look at the definitions of property in the Utah Code. And that's under section 59-2-102, subsection 29. And subsection 29 defines property as property that is subject to assessment and taxation according to its value. And I don't think that anyone disputes that both personal property and real property are assessed based on value. You take a cost approach value in for personal property, and for real property, they use different approaches. You could have the cost, the income, or market approaches. But both for real and personal property, it is assessed based on value. So we believe that the statute is clear that its reference to property includes both real and personal property, because it's a singular reference to property all throughout the access interruption statute.
But not in the case of 9 and 10?
So 9 and 10, they would qualify, but the applications did not request an adjustment for personal property. So the argument would be, I would go in and look at the letter for the 9 and 10 and say, look, they weren't very clear. They did cite the statute. The statute says property. They didn't ask for real property specifically. They didn't ask for personal property specifically. So there's an argument that you could allow an adjustment for 9 and 10. But I think we concede that personal property wasn't specifically called out in the application.
Yeah.
But if the board believes, look, you know, the access interruption statute speaks for itself. The definition of property includes both real and personal. We can make an adjustment for personal property as well as real property. If the board finds that, then it would be appropriate to make an adjustment for 9 and 10 as well. But we concede that there was no reference to personal property in 9 and 10. So we believe the statute absolutely allows it. Now, the second question is, okay, was there a notice? Did we ask for it in our application? All three theaters, we specifically identified personal property. And as far as evidence goes, we provided evidence that all three theaters operated at a loss during 2020 because of the access interruption and COVID. And if we were to go into evaluation discussion, we would absolutely note that the personal property couldn't be used while the theaters were closed. It's been used limited basis because obviously the concession equipment, the theaters are used less than they were. So
their value went down because they weren't used?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And if anything, the personal property has a life that's shorter than real property. So a limited use or a non-use by personal property might affect the value of personal property even more than real property. But again, you know, Mr. Jepson and I had spoke about an adjustment for personal property, and that the 15% would be appropriate if the board finds that personal property is included in the statute and should be adjusted, and that we gave a sufficient notice in our application by listing personal property.
So I gotta cut in because I'm stuck on one spot here, and that's with this personal property valuation. If you're claiming that personal property has gone down, I mean that you've lost value in personal property, how do you determine that?
So if you look at valuing a business, when you value a business using an income approach, it values all property, all real, personal, and tangible, all property goes into an income approach. So personal property is included if you use an income approach. You'd have to split it out. In fact, a lot of times the appraisal, Mr. Jepson mentioned the appraisals that were done, they subtracted out personal property from the valuation. So if you do an income approach, you're always going to get a value of the entire business, and personal property is part of the operating business, part of the unit of the operating business. So it's always included in the income approach unless you specifically strip it out. So where the income is generated from the property, both real and personal, we believe that the personal property income is in there and the value is in there. Now, the adjustment, again, that is more difficult, and that's why Mr. Jepson and I talked through that. It's tough to focus just on income, because if we use an income approach solely, the value would be zero. But we know that that's not true. There's some value in the property, no question. But if you look at just an income approach, in the midst of the pandemic, their operating, their net income, their cash flows are zero. They're negative. So that can't be the case to value some property. There's some value to it. So you have to do some reconciliation, look at the cost approach, look at adjustments. And so that's where we've come to an agreement that the reduction would be 15%.
What I see in this is that when you are prepared to buy a business, you take in consideration of the totality. Well, that would be the structure, equipment, any moving stock that has any alliances with that property. And so in the same thought is that when you build a business, you include all of that in your costs and deficit ratios. What will it take to buy all the equipment you need in order to operate? And so that way you break out what your profit margins would be. And in this case, it would be the other way around. What is your losses? So are they paying for the equipment that they bought, anticipating usage? And if they're not, what impact did that? And they have to adjust their internal structure in order to meet profitability levels. Does that make sense? I would ask.
I guess I don't understand exactly where you're going there, but you know, absolutely, you're correct that when you start up a business, you need to account for the cost of personal property, equipment. You account for the cost of real property. So there is a separate valuation in Utah. The mechanism has been there's a lot of personal property, and so the tax commission has generated schedules that depreciate personal property, and that's what is used for valuation purposes throughout Utah.
That's going to happen anyway, right? I mean, that's going to happen if you're access interruption or not. You're going to go through the same process. I mean, time is the factor on that. I'm just wondering how to tie the access interruption to this, because time is going to take care of that anyway. So I'm just having a hard time tying that.
Yeah, so the access interruption, it's just like the property, the real property has not been able to be used. The personal property has not been able to be used, mm-hmm. because of the access interruption. We couldn't use the concessions. We couldn't use the monitors for the projectors. So those items of personal property, when you're unable to use them, it's an external obsolescence factor. And so, you wouldn't expect, when you're going to buy that property, you're not expecting you're going to have a pandemic to shut down.
Do you think anybody could argue though that the access interruption on this and the not being able to use those actually extended life on some
that's
of the
not
equipment?
How you would, yeah, I mean that's not a typical analysis for personal property because it has a life, but sure it may be able to extend the life. But that wouldn't be a typical analysis. As time goes on, you have equipment that is better, and you purchase better equipment. You purchase better, like for example, if you look at a projector at a movie theater, they go out of service not necessarily because they don't run anymore. It's just that the technology gets better, and so you get a new projector because it's the latest and greatest. So it's not necessarily that it wasn't used or it couldn't be used in the future. So that's a separate factor on that. So, you know, useful life can be adjusted. There's no question. We don't dispute that at all.
So what there's...
If I can talk, I've got my hand up here. I don't want to interrupt anybody, but the issue for me comes back to it's 59-2-1004-6C, where it says that the hearing described in subsection 4B, the applicant shall have the burden of proving by a preponderance of the evidence. From my point of view as an appraiser, the appraisal did not include personal property. There was no information given, and that's why we can go back and forth as commissioners and attorneys and as an appraiser and say, well, let's talk about it. But the burden to show by a preponderance of evidence is the taxpayer's burden. And so I wasn't able to meet to say that I was going to agree to any value reduction on personal property because this burden has not been met. So we can all talk about what our personal opinion is as to what that, but to me, it's a legal issue that it wasn't met. There was no information in the appraisals. There was no information submitted. So whether we think, well, it might have affected it up or down or extended the useful life or all the things that have been said by Mr. Runyon, the fact from my point of view is it doesn't meet the legal qualification of a preponderance of evidence. There was no evidence, period. So that's why I had a hard time saying I can't agree really to this portion.
And might I respond to that? I think the statute is clear that we are able to submit at a hearing, right? So I think the real legal issue for the board is whether personal property is included under the access interruption. And if it's included under the access interruption, there's no dispute over the reduction in value. So we've already agreed to the reduction in value. So really the question is, legally, can personal property be reduced value because of the access interruption? If you look at the statute, it allows us to have a hearing on the valuation, and we can put on evidence at the valuation, but that's not the issue. It's whether we identified that we asked for personal property reduction, which is undisputed that we did. And then the second question is, does the statute allow a reduction for personal property as well as real property? And our position is it does. And then we have an opportunity at this very hearing to address the valuation. But again, that point is moot because we already agreed that the value has been affected and has declined. So really it's the legal question of, is personal property able to be reduced in value because of the access interruption statute?
Was there any evidence at all presented on personal property? I mean, we all agreed that for the real property, there was evidence submitted. And after we went through at length, you and I, that there was a justifiable reduction. But where is the evidence showing what happened to personal property?
Sure. And we submitted, so there's two pieces of evidence. The appraisals first show an income approach, and then they strip out the personal property, right? So we can look at that. If we want to take the time to go to the appraisals, we can do that. But secondly, we submitted evidence that the reduction, there was over 100% reduction, each of the theaters is a little bit different, but the income and the net income of the facilities declined, and they had operating losses for all three facilities. So if you look at an income approach, the value of the real and personal property in the midst of the pandemic is zero. Again, we're not arguing that that's the case, but that's the market evidence we provided, that the income is zero. So the personal property plus real property has to generate positive income, and it doesn't during the pandemic time. So I think we absolutely provided evidence to show that the value of the property, personal property, has been reduced because of the pandemic, and the income of the theaters have been zero or negative, I should say.
From the quote on one of the statutes where it did not mention specifically personal property, which citation was that?
So the citation is 59-2-1004.6, subsection 2. So if you look in that whole statute, 1004.6, it references properties 9 different times. And in each case, it says only property. It doesn't say real property. It doesn't say personal property. So our position is, and this is a normal statutory construction that we do in the legal area all the time, we go to the definitions in that chapter. So we go to the definitions under Chapter 2, Section 102, and the definition of property is all property that is taxed based on valuation. Okay. And there's no dispute that real property and personal property are taxed based on valuation. So our position is the reference to property incorporates both real and personal property.
Paul, do you have any insights?
No, I agree with Mr. Runyon on that point. The access interruption statute just references property, and I think that's a broad enough description to include both real and personal.
So it comprehends both categories then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the second issue is, as a Board of Equalization, you can only grant an application as applied, right? And so the hotels didn't even ask for personal property, and so I think you'd have a really difficult time granting more relief than was requested. As to the movie theaters, I don't know if the board's familiar with the application, but there's sort of a formal section on the front page where you're supposed to identify the property, and each of the movie theaters, if my memory serves, they identified the real property by parcel number, and they identified that clearly up front. And then in the narrative section, they mentioned personal property in the narrative section. So I think that's what Peter was kind of talking about with, I'm not even sure if they've requested the relief appropriately. Normally, I would say that you'd expect to see all of the tax accounts that you're looking to get reduced in the top formal section. Mr. Runyon mentioned, though, that they did include the request for associated personal property in the narrative section. So just to give you an idea of what the application looked like and how that was included. And then the third point is, the taxpayer does have the burden of proof by the preponderance of evidence, meaning more than 50%, convincing you by more than 50% that they're entitled to that relief. And so that would be the board's decision.
Yeah, for me, I'm thinking of the return on investment. So that I see new construction. It's the totality of everything that goes with it, as I mentioned before. It's the structure, it's the moving stock, and it's all the infrastructure that supports that building. And I see the separation of personal property from real property. I understand that. I'm just fixated on this the more comprehensive properties, where it just specified properties in general as a whole.
Okay.
I think Diana Flores.
Okay.
Comment she wanted to make on this issue.
All right, Diana.
So we would just like the minutes to reflect that the assessor's office disagrees that COVID-19 pandemic qualifies as access interruption, allowing for a reduction of valuation, and only because the BOE has made the decision to entertain that the COVID-19 pandemic does, are we agreeing to these adjusted valuations? And we'd also like to point out that further that the applicant does have the burden of proving by the preponderance of the evidence that they need to show that the property sustained a decrease in the fair market value that was caused by the access interruption and the amount of the decrease in the fair market value. And as Peter mentioned, that was not included in the evidence.
So that sounds like a setup for an appeal. Is that kind of the intent?
Excuse me, Commissioner. I just want to respond to that. I mean, to the extent that the board believes that we've not met our burden on the personal property, we're happy to go and I can present our valuation evidence on that point. My understanding was that we were going to look at the legal issue of whether personal property could be included. And if the board finds that it is, then we had agreed on what the value was. But if that's not the case and the board feels that we need to go forward and show the decrease in value, I'm happy to pull up the information and go through the decline in value for each of the facilities and go through those issues. My sense is that it wouldn't be necessary as it's a legal issue that the board's going to decide. And if that is the case, that the personal property is allowed to be reduced because of the statute, then there's no reason to go and look at the valuation issues because there's no dispute on the valuation decrease.
Right. And so the question I have for Diana and her comment, so going through an evaluation, then the evaluation that we went through is just because the board has had determined by a preponderance of evidence that we looked at that there was access interruption. Otherwise, the valuation that we're determining now is moot. I'm trying to understand the comment more.
Yeah. So the assessor's office disagrees that COVID-19 qualifies as access interruption, but because the board has determined that COVID-19 could be access interruption, then we are agreeing to the valuation.
Okay.
Because the board is viewing this as access.
And Chris, you're in agreement with that.
I think this, Chris Polson, County Assessor. I think at this point, whether we appeal or don't appeal, I don't think that's even relevant. I think what she's saying is we and it was clear that we didn't agree that it was that this type of access interruption, COVID-19, qualified. And you've already made a judgment on that. So now we're in the valuation part of it. So whether there's a potential appeal or not is irrelevant at this point. Because
yeah, I just find it interesting that it's brought up, you know, yeah. as we want to make it clear to a certain extent.
Because
certain
you've already
way.
Taken a position on it.
We have.
Yeah, so it's not relevant.
It's an interesting comment to be made, you know, at this point in time, in this juncture. When.
Well, I think the comment is simply that the assessors appear to be stipulating to this issue. The valuation aspect of it, but that they weren't stipulating to the whole picture. They're only stipulating to half of the second half of the picture. If that makes sense.
I believe that's what Diana is trying to just state is we are agreeing to the valuation part of this appeal, and we're participating in it. It's not that we agree that it should happen, but we are agreeing to be part of the process and to work through this part of the appeal.
Okay.
I'm inclined to go with the comprehensive properties that we mentioned. That would be, it would comprehend both real and personal property. In all of these, so 10% for the first two and 15% for the last three.
With the personal property?
Yes.
Okay.
Again, based on that statute that we have circled on a couple times, find access interruption and defining properties.
Even though I guess this is for our conversation up here on the board now, so even though they never even applied for it under 9 and 10?
I think the statute that he cited in 59 under access interruption was properties. It didn't stipulate the differences between real and personal.
Right.
And why that there was missed specificity, bringing that out earlier by one party or the other and during the dialogue, during the discussion. I don't know the answer to that. But I'm inclined to think that the return on investments, the ROIs, would include all aspects of what's within that property.
Okay. I'm not, so that makes us a 1-1 split on this thing, which means that nothing happens. I could go along with kind of what Mr. Runyon said at the very beginning, if we wanted to go with the stated amount under 9 and 10 for the 10% and the on the real property for 11, 12, and 13, and at least have a step in a direction, and then the others could be discussed.
Discussed for 9 and 10 separately on another day, or?
I don't know. I'm trying to feel my way through on this, Paul. If we did 9 and 10 and we said, okay, on the real property for 9 and 10, it's 10%, and then stipulated that 11, 12, and 13 is at 15% for real property. And then the others would have to bring forth all of the information and the evidence to it, for consideration, not knowing what that is. As far as what Peter's telling me, he hasn't even seen anything to it, so it's kind of hard to make some stipulation on something that hasn't been seen yet. Then can we go further and there can be more discussion on the rest of it?
Yeah, you could do that. Again, I think on 9 and 10, you'll have to just, I think being clear about, are you going to even entertain evidence on personal property where they didn't apply for it is one major issue. Secondly, on 11, 12, and 13, if you are going to allow the personal property, there was some indication that Peter was, or that the assessor's office, Mr. Jepson, was willing to stipulate to 15% if the board decided they wanted to go in that direction. So I don't know if you want to continue it, because it sounds maybe asking Mr. Jepson his position on that issue. If you indicate that, yes, you're willing to look at the personal property on 11, 12, and 13, does he want to, work with Mr. Runyon for another month, or is he wanting to stipulate to the 15%? Sounds like he was willing to stipulate.
Thank you for letting me speak here. In essence, Mr. Runyon and I have already agreed on 9 and 10 that personal property is not going to be considered. I mean, that's our agreement already come in, and it would be like me saying, well, I've changed my mind now. I think I want to go 12% on the last three items. And so we've already agreed that personal property would not be part of the debate. So it's kind of switching, which I don't feel real good about that, because we did have an agreement. As far as 11, 12, and 13, it's my personal opinion that the data was not, that just because real property met the burden and personal property could also be included based on Mr. Runyon's definition of property, the burden of proof was not met on personal property. So as I see it, yes, they met their burden and we agreed to 15% reduction on the three movie theaters, but I don't agree and haven't agreed that they met their burden of proof on the personal property. And just because you have a real property number doesn't mean that you have a personal property. And I felt like that the board ought to decide if they think that personal property should be included and that they met their burden of proof. If the board decides they want to go back and have another hearing and have evidence submitted as to the value on the personal property, from my point, it really wasn't part of the application. They really didn't meet their burden of proof, in my opinion. And it wasn't even brought to my attention until quite a bit later that it was even mentioned. And it was mentioned in a way, how should I put it? And personal, it gives the value of the real property, and then it says, and personal property, if applicable, which sometimes when you have an appraisal or you look at commercial values, you have real property and personal property included in the appraisal, and then they separate out the personal property. And so it'd be like the appraiser saying, well, I don't know if the county included any impersonal property in their valuation, but if they did, that would be applicable too. So I have a problem all the way from the onset, because it seems like we're throwing it in after the fact I have no problem saying the real property met its burden. I did say that the appraiser said he did not include personal property. And so I'm glad I'm not making the call on it, but my personal opinion is the 15% for the movie theaters for the real property and the personal property never met its burden and was never really good in the application.
Sorry, I realized.
So might I respond to that briefly?
Sure.
I agree with Mr. Jepson on the hotels 8 and 9. We had come to an agreement, and I looked at the application and said, you know what, the owners didn't include personal property on the application. So we agreed and we stipulated that the personal property wouldn't be allowed for the hotels. And it's because they weren't listed in the application. As far as the theaters, Mr. Jepson and I did agree that the board would address the legal issue and that if the board found that an adjustment was appropriate, that the 15% that was agreed on with real property would be agreed upon for the theaters. And so, you know, we had an email exchange and Mr. Jepson said, if the BOE accepts the personal property applications, the same percentage reduction should be applied to the personal property. So we, as a valuation matter, we've agreed to the adjustment. So the only question in my mind is if the board believes that personal property is included in the statute, and if it was in the application, it was in the application. We, again, I think in good faith, we said, look, it wasn't in there for the hotels, but it was in there for the theaters. So that's our position. If the board thinks that we didn't meet the burden, we can go down that route and have a valuation hearing on that. But I believe that we've already agreed to a valuation, so there's no need for a valuation hearing on that. It would just be if personal property is allowed under the statute. So that's our position.
Mike, your thoughts?
I feel comfortable in doing the real property for 9 and 10 as agreed to and stipulated there, and also doing the real property for 11, 12, and 13, excluding personal property.
So no personal property for any of the five then?
For any of them. And I wouldn't mind leaving that door open, you know, for further discussion. If needed or necessary, if Mr. Runyon felt like that needed to go, you know, further for more discussion, but if that can be done, I'd like to at least stipulate part of that.
This is Paul Jones. My recommendation, I know we keep doing this, but would be just to continue those items then, because it gets so, you know, you've already made one motion, but the agenda item isn't final yet. And if we do that again, it kind of, to me anyway, kind of muddies the agenda item. You make partial motion,
well,
motion.
I don't know if it muddies it, maybe in the sense that, you know, if there's an agreement that we can come to and we need 2-0 on it to agree to it, then why not at least stipulate that and start down some path?
Yeah, and I get that too, but you'll need to continue. I think you'll need a formal motion to continue the item to the next agenda if you want to take any additional action on those items.
I see. So you could, so we could have it would probably all be one motion, just stipulating part of it, but continuing as well.
Yeah. Previously you made individual motions last meeting to say that you would allow COVID or you wouldn't allow COVID to justify the access interruption, but we continued the item still. So
yeah.
You'd need to, because if you don't continue this item, it's not going to be on the agenda.
But we could make a motion to approve what is on now and with the stipulated continuation on personal property.
I think you can do that.
I would hope that we would be able to completely resolve 9 and 10, but that no further consideration is really needed on 9 and 10. That was the agreement that we have. Then whatever you decide to do with 11, 12, and 13 could be separate from that, because we already have an agreement on 9 and 10.
And that could be done too.
Yeah, I think there could be a motion on 9 and 10 as to the 10% reduction of the current value. And I should note that one of those hotels, the assessor's office already made an adjustment, so it'd be 10% to the value that is currently on the county rolls.
Okay, so we could have two separate motions, and one on 9 and 10, and then a separate motion on 11, 12, and 13, potentially to continue for personal property.
Okay, I'm ready.
See if I can do this. Then I make a motion for items 9 and 10 that we approve the 10% reduction in real property in fair market value due to access interruption.
And I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0 for both 9 and 10. 11, 12, and 13.
And then 11, 12, and 13, I make a motion with a stipulation that we approve 11, 12, and 13 for the 15% reduction in real property as recommended, with the continuation on personal property values also attached to items 11, 12, and 13.
To be addressed at the next
to be addressed in a continued next board of equalization meeting.
Okay, so we approved of the real property, or at least we agreed to that. And okay, so I'll second that. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. All right, let's move to item number 14.
Commissioners, I apologize. Might I, just so that we have some direction on what you'd like us to address for the personal property for the next hearing. I know we continued it and we addressed it. I guess the question is if the board believes that personal property is allowed, or if it's a factual issue on the application. I think it'll help me and Mr. Jepson to kind of see where we're going from here. Because if the board, as a matter of law, says personal property is not included in the statute, then we're done and we don't need to have another hearing. But if it's something else, I think we'd like to understand so we can know what's
presented to you. Here's the problem. The problem is that we have two commissioners here. And so without a third commissioner, we have to have a unanimous vote on that. And for me to say that personal property is allowed in this is not going to happen. So it'll probably wind up being a 1-to-1, which means a no decision. So I think Mr. Runyon, you're going to have to determine from our past meetings where we had Commissioner Ainge here, where you think this is going.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I appreciate that. So one of the commissioners' position is that it's not allowable, and the other is that it is. So we're 1-1 right now. That's where we are.
Right.
And I think it's not a valuation issue. It's more of an issue with, was the application appropriate and did it follow through? And then I guess it would be up to Commissioner Ainge to break the tie here.
Plus, we already, and we've already set in my mind a precedent, and that is that 9 and 10, and there's no doubt that there's personal property that's in those as well. And so we've already determined on that one. And so for a consistency basis, I'm going to hold consistent with what we've done in the past there.
So in for 9 and 10, it wasn't the issue that it wasn't included in the application. It was you don't see a difference between 9 and 10 and 11, 12, and 13 on the statutory interpretation?
Well, according to your interpretation of it, when you were telling us, the property is property. It didn't matter if it was personal property or real property. And so I was, that's where I was trying to draw that fine line, because if you're arguing that on one side, I think you should have been arguing on the other side as well, but that didn't, it didn't translate.
So we did raise that point, but the reason we conceded was because the application didn't actually ask for personal property in it, whereas the other applications did ask for personal property.
Yeah.
That was the distinguishing factor I was making, and maybe I misunderstood your position then.
And that's what I was going with.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I appreciate your explanation. Thank you.
You bet. Okay. We will move on then to item number 14.
Item number 14 is really based on a lot of what you've already heard, because the megaplex that's on 14 is actually, I believe it was item number, I want to get this right.
Item number 13
is part of this economic unit, except it's owned by someone else that Thanksgiving Point is leasing the property to. So because it's in the same zoning, because it's very similar in the type of use, as I talked to the representatives from Thanksgiving Point, I let them know that all these similarities in the appraisal are very common to the economic unit that is in question here. And so both parties agreed that if the theater, which is very similar to the Renaissance Theater that's down there, the show barn, the museum, all of these different types of uses, if the theater was agreed to at 15%, then we would also agree to 15%.
Correct. And we weren't smart enough to pursue personal property, so all we're talking about is real property.
Did you agree on the Cavern Valley Maze, Chris, also?
Yeah, because it was included as part of the economic unit in the prior decision, then we decided to let it be included in the economic unit here. So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, it seems to me then that being consistent with what we've done already, approving this one at 15% to me seems appropriate.
Are we done with discussion? Yep. Anything more from?
Yeah. Mike or Alan, did you want anything more, or do you want to just move forward?
We would love to just have that approved and move forward. And next year, if we do this again, we hope not to go last.
I'm just going off of how it was listed on the paper.
I understand.
Yeah. Hey, they should be grateful that someone else laid the groundwork for them. So.
Yeah, you didn't have to
That's
go
true.
Through
we are, and we are. We are grateful. Yeah. Very grateful.
So we had mentioned during this discussion item 13. Are we talking 13 or are we talking 14?
Just 14.
This is 14.
Okay. Because I heard 13 as well as in this, and I want to make sure that we're talking about item 14. Okay.
I only referenced 13 because it's the Megaplex Theater that's located at Thanksgiving Point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Parking lot for the Megaplex Theater.
Okay.
Part of it.
And then I make a motion that we approve item number 14. For a 15% decrease in fair market value due to access interruption.
I'll second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Last
Thank
motion.
You very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for staying Thanks. At the end.
Yeah. You bet.
Last motion?
I guess it's make a motion that we adjourn.
I'll second that. All in favor. I guess we're adjourned. So there we go.
Aye.